Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
We're going to talk about the law and how it can affect your story.
That's how we roll. 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 That's how we roll.
Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight, we're talking about the law.
And yeah, the people who enforce it.
That's pretty much it, yeah. A couple episodes ago, we talked about city building.
Sure.
And how to make a better city or nation. And we're going to expand a little bit upon this now and talk more specifically about how you can build a system of consequences for your player characters, regardless of the game. So it could be super sci-fi, it could be medieval.
Yeah.
We'll probably dip a lot medieval, but I've got a couple of examples of some superheroes and futuristic examples as well.
Yeah.
And why it's an important addition to your game system. But before we get to that, what's going on with you this week, Matt?
Oh, you know, all sorts of fun and excitement. I have a giant oak tree that is currently chopped up in the middle of my yard.
Ah, yes. Because we've recorded these somewhat in advance, what many people don't know is that we had a storm earlier and Matt lost a tree. Actually, his neighbor lost a tree. And it fell in his yard, which means he lost a yard because now he's got a tree lying in front of it.
Yeah, it was a 100-year-old oak tree or so. It's taking up probably the third of my front yard.
So what you're saying is you've got a lot of firewood to deal with.
I do. I just need, it has been cut into ginormous logs. Now it just needs to be split up enough to actually carry back there because even though I am enormous, these are mo enormouser than me.
Yeah, man. You can borrow my chainsaw. It's cool.
What about you? What have you been up to?
Not much. Just building things, writing for the site. That's pretty much it. We've been pretty active in the Twitterverse and Facebookverse and other verses as well, which is good.
I love it. You've also, you've made several things, like you said. For those of you who don't know or who haven't followed the Instagram or the occasional picture on Twitter as well, Eric makes scatter terrain, critters, and all sorts of things like that.
I mostly have been creating them out of junk lately, but I've got a house I've made. Let's see. I'm just looking at what I have right now. Some dungeon tiles, some scatter terrain pillars. I made a couple of spiders, monster spiders, out of the tiny little spider rings that you get at the dollar store.
Sure.
A little bit of hot glue and some paint. And I'm working on a guard tower made out of a Quaker Oats box.
Yeah.
Because why not?
That's one of the ones that interests me. And the other one that interests me is the currently set aside, but soon to happen, enormous monstrosity that you have planned.
Oh, you can tell him. It's fine. So I've got this gigantic, I went to the dollar store, which by the way, if you're ever into crafting, go to the dollar store. They got all kinds of great shit. I found this, it's a skeletal spider that I got for a buck, and it would be in D&D terms, I would say, what do you think, colossal or gargantuan? I think
probably colossal.
Colossal, you think?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know, I might lean towards gargantuan in that. I don't know if it's big enough for colossal, but either way, it looks like a skeletal spider, which is ridiculous because, you know, they have exoskeletons. But still, the basis of this is the perfect size for me to make a gigantic fiendish monstrous spider.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start playing around with some air dry clay and use this as a base. And I'm sure by the time this comes out, it'll be up.
Sounds good.
Yeah. So check our Instagram, which is The Goblin's Corner.
Right.
And of course, any questions that you guys have for us, whether you want to talk to me about crafting or you want to talk to Matt about something other than crafting, hit us up, eric@goblinscorner.com or
Matt@goblinscorner.com.
Or you can reach us info@goblinscorner.com. All right. You have a question of the week.
I do.
I almost forgot about that.
We must have a question of the week. Otherwise,
oh my God,
it ceases to
be
the question of
the
week.
What is wrong with me tonight? Jesus, I'm losing it.
We're struggling a little bit, but we're going to make it through this, man.
Right,
I believe in us.
Let's do this.
All right.
Hit me.
Can you think of a time that you or your GM used the law or, you know, the people who enforce the law to good narrative effect in a story? I can
give me your example first then.
So I was playing in a single person game myself, and then just the DM running it. And he used the law, or more specifically, the town guard, to very much enforce the concept that this town was separated into financial classes. The town was set up into wards, and the gate guards, depending on how you were dressed, depending on whether or not you were wearing noble livery and things like that, very much reacted differently to different people based off of their social / economic status.
That's really cool.
And so, and yeah, that, exactly. I thought that was a great way to kind of keep the player very strongly honed in on the concept that social inequality is thriving in this particular location.
Sure. I have an example, and it's not necessarily with the law per se, but it is like a legal thing. So writs of passage is the first thing I can think of, like passports, right?
Sure.
In last time we played Eberron, you have to have documentation. Papers, please. Every time you get from one country to the next. And I was playing at the time a changeling who had forgery, of course.
Sure.
So that because I had like six different identities, and it was a lot of flavor and a lot of fun to have to forge them, not just for myself, but for
me.
Yeah, that's right. Cause you were a goblin, right?
I was, but
was that when you played Smudge?
It is. But remember, Smudge had the alternate identity of the high fashion designer Smoo Oft Swer.
Ah, yes. And we had to forge his identity to get him into, oh God, was it a noble's palace or something like that? Because
there was a gala.
Yeah, there was a big to do, and we had to kind of finagle our way to get in there, and then we made this amazing series of checks to pull off the fact that you were this goblin fashion designer and got everybody's attention while we were robbing somebody else blind, if I recall.
But yeah, the robbing did happen. It actually happened beforehand. We were there because there was going to be an assassination attempt, I think.
Oh, and we had to protect somebody.
Right.
That's right. So yeah, so that was a good example. And of course, the consequences behind that could have been disastrous for us.
Super bad.
Super bad.
So bad.
Yeah, so that was my example of that.
And one of the things I like to do is, because I like party cohesion, if I've got a group that is starting out and they go to a major city, if you want to bear arms in the city, you must register your adventuring group.
Or peace bond your weapons. That's another good one.
It is. But one of the things that registering your adventure group does is makes you come up with a name for your group.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you come up with a badge or a set of colors or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Like a livery.
Exactly. So that everybody in the group now has a stronger team concept, because they're all responsible for each other according to the law now, because they've been registered legally as a group.
So if they go murder hobo on another town, they're going to be known. They get back to their hometown, they could have their charter revoked as an adventuring group, branded outlaws.
Yep. It's going to affect your reputation. And I run with a very invisible reputation progression, but it has effects. What you pay for things, how a town treats you. If you've got a fantastic reputation in one town and a garbage reputation in another town, a third town that is equidistant between those two, you're going to start neutral but with suspicion.
Now, all of these are great segues into what we're going to talk about tonight, which is, yeah, of course, about the law. And I think that what you're saying right now sets the first thing in motion about what we're going to talk about. So let's go ahead and just dive into this.
Sure, let's do it.
So using Matt's example, talking about the law, why is it important, first off? Why is it important to talk about rules and regulations in a D&D game when, let's be perfectly honest, if you're playing any type of role-playing game, whether it's Shadowrun or D&D, you're probably breaking the law, or you're doing something fantasy-oriented or sci-fi-oriented, and you're making something fiction. Most people don't want to think about ramifications. Well, the biggest reason, as Matt mentioned, is it sets a tone.
Yep.
It helps your characters create, and honestly, it brings them together. So let's talk about setting the tone first off. So depending upon the situation or the location, the law and those individuals that enforce it, whether it's some kind of magocracy or, you know, just the town guards or even, I guess, what, a lawyer or a barrister?
Sure.
It can vary according to location and the nation, too.
Yeah.
So one of the things I often ask when I'm creating, and this is something that came up in our city building episode as well, is what sort of society are you adventuring in?
Yeah, that's super important, because if you're in a extremely civilized society, then they're going to have very codified sets of rules. They're going to have town guards. They're going to have jurisdiction and all manner of things that a frontier town simply isn't going to have.
Yeah. If you roll up into like a Wild West themed type town, you know, sometimes bad guy just needs killing.
Right.
And that's fine.
And sometimes if you run your mouth, you lose your teeth. Like that's just
yep.
how things work there.
Versus something like a magocracy or a theocracy where there are clear avenues of power.
Right.
And as such, clear taboos.
Yeah. Especially in a theocracy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, using Eberron as an example, Silver Flame, right?
Yeah.
Perfect example of stuff like that. Like, they literally killed most of the shapeshifters.
Right.
On Eberron. And that's just, that was just one of those things. I think, what did they outlawed certain types of magic, if I recall. I don't remember. I have to go back and read all that stuff. It doesn't matter. Not in this example anymore.
Right.
So those types of ideas, knowing your setting, knowing your location, lets you know what's going on, lets you know who's in charge, both on paper and in the reality of the game. Right. What I mean by that is, yeah, the monarchy might be in charge in your game, but who's behind the throne? Who's actually in charge? So one of the things I find, and this is really big on a hack and slash campaign, but in a intrigue or spy type campaign, is workings behind the scenes, the local thieves guild that might be influencing
yeah.
the monarchy, or maybe there is a what is it called? Well, just like maybe it's ruled by a council of merchants, and then these merchants are then being blackmailed by a shadowy organization who actually runs things behind the scenes, or even just a powerful individual or a big bad guy,
or just. Like you said, a powerful individual could also just be somebody who's extremely wealthy. If you've got a merchant council and they have an extremely wealthy patron pulling the strings, realistically, that patron runs things.
And something that you don't also think is, just because it could be someone pulling the strings, it doesn't mean they're the bad guy.
Right.
Some societies in fantasy situations could be, here's a good example, in certain cities in the Forgotten Realms, they would be inclined to be more lawful, neutral, lawful, evil, but there's people behind the scenes trying to do some good as well.
Yeah.
And vice versa, of course, a lot more of the vice versa than that. But those provide examples of why it's important.
Well, and the other side of the who's actually in charge thing could be that if you are, as we said before, a frontier town.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 1,500 miles away from the capital, while the king / queen, regent, whatever, is ostensibly in charge.
Yeah.
The mayor runs that town.
Oh, sure. Well, and that's like who's in the chain of command.
Right.
That's another example, too. Knowing that stuff, do you need it in a campaign? No.
Maybe. But depends on the campaign.
Depends on
yeah.
the campaign. But it definitely would give depth to your game. And if you're trying to write your own game world, you definitely want to have it, because it just gives a lot more to that.
You need to know where all the webs are.
Yes. Another thing to consider is the appearance or the bearing of a city's guards or police. This can tell a lot about the new place that you're venturing for the player character specifically.
Yeah.
And that's just description information. Just like when you walk into a city, you get description information of the city, knowing the types of guards, whether they are, you know, they got uniforms, some kind of military bent, or maybe they're just plain clothes civilians walking around
with a badge.
Yeah. Lets you know how powerful that the establishment is, you know.
Right. It can also, especially in smaller towns, it can also provide some flavor that could otherwise be lacking in a small town.
Sure.
I mean, in big towns too, sure, obviously, but there's so much going on in big towns that it's less important. But in a small town, if you've got your Barney Fife sheriff, right? Like, it's just some flavor that make people go, oh, this place exists. It's not just a hole in the wall that I have to stop at because we need to grab some more rations.
Well, and this is one of those things also, knowing how, and granted, your game may vary, but knowing how our friends play sometimes, it can be one of those things where how powerful are the NPCs in this town in relation to the PCs?
Sure.
Does it happen a lot? Sure. Our characters are going to get into fights with you know, people in the town, and it's always interesting to see how far your players will push the boundaries of what's going on. Again, this is a fantasy game or it's a sci-fi game. It's, you know, it's fiction. And so you're going to give them a little bit of leeway, and you should as a GM.
Somewhat. I'm a firm believer in a little bit of leeway, but I strongly enjoy actions having consequences.
Sure. And knowing how powerful the guard is in this case, or anybody really, would allow the players to kind of gauge how far they can push things.
And sure.
And the reason I say that is oftentimes the first rule of business is to murder hobo your way through an entire town to get where you need to be. Oh, that guard's coming rolling up on you. Just knock him out, drag him into a ditch, you know, that type of thing. Well, sure. But if his buddy is a mage slayer, now things get a little complicated. Or maybe when he gets unconscious, a spell goes off. Or maybe they're just more badass than you, depending upon the level of your characters.
Sure. The other side of that is, if this town can afford to pay your rates to deal with their problems,
they can probably afford to pay.
They can afford to pay someone to deal with you.
Absolutely.
Mercenaries are a thing. They absolutely exist.
Now, speaking of stuff like that, do they have mercenary units? Do they have elite units? So do they have people that handle specific types of threats like dragons or the roaming monster or mages is a great one. And there's a lot of examples in the Forgotten Realms. For example, the Griffin Cavalry in Waterdeep.
Yeah. Force Grey, for that matter, in Waterdeep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, in Cormyr, the Purple Dragons.
Yeah. Wow. There. Oh, the freaking, what is it, Tethyr, that's the Mageocracy that has the entire Mage Guard?
Yes. There's lots of examples in that.
So, well, Forgotten Realms is huge and old.
And then in Sharn, in Eberron, they've got investigators.
Yeah.
So if you just, you know, murder some rando, you're going to have...
Well, that rando could be attached to a house. That rando could be attached to a major bank. I mean, it is a terrible plan.
Yeah, you're going to have CSI Sharn after your ass at that point.
Or, God forbid, you accidentally murder someone who's on the criminal side. And then you're going to have an entire criminal syndicate after you.
Yep.
There is...
That's almost as bad as going after someone who is dragon-marked.
Sure. And in some cases, both.
So a lot of good role-playing stuff all across the board.
Yeah.
Another thing to consider is how do the guards or the law treat the common folk? And when you say common folk, whether it's the middle class, the poor class, whatever social strata your game happens to have... Whether it's, you know, the typical runner, if you're playing Shadowrun. And how do they treat people of different social standings, which you kind of mentioned in your question of the week.
Yeah. I think it is, if you're in an extremely lawful city, right? One of the great things about that is social strata likely will matter significantly less for the application of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're in a chaotic city, it's probably got laws, even if it's a primarily chaotic city, but you can probably purchase/bully your way out of them.
can buy that. So there's different opportunities for characters to advance themselves.
Sure.
Or bypass the network of laws and actions and consequences so they can get to what they need to do in the story. So it's good for your player characters to know. And it works really well. A lot of this stuff obviously works in some kind of subterfuge game, but it also works in games like if you're playing a criminal syndicate, like a thieves game, you got to know the laws for that.
For the longest time, I have wanted to run a campaign where someone is attempting to start a thieves guild.
I'm going to make a character for that. Trust me. How does the law feel about adventurers, adventure companies, or how they feel about superheroes if you're playing a superhero campaign? How do they feel about mages if you're playing something with magic in them, or even if you're playing like a White Wolf campaign, like vampires, and if the supernatural is known,
right?
Or cyber technology if you're playing something sci-fi.
Sure.
How does it feel about smugglers if you're playing in space? Well, any of those outliers where you would play someone extraordinary, which is usually what you end up playing in a role-playing game.
Yeah. It's a fine line to tackle, because especially like in the case of superheroes, right? Superheroes ostensibly act for the law, but slightly outside of it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a Shadowrunner operates outside of the law. 100%.
Yeah.
They were, unless they have specifically been recruited by the law, they operate outside the law. And if they get caught, bad things will happen.
They might obey the rules of the road just to get to the stuffer shack, and that's about it.
Sure.
They might renew their dock wagon contract occasionally.
Yes.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
Everything else is outside the law. Yeah. So it's good to know. Are there special laws that apply to those specific individuals, i.e. the PCs, which is really what they care about?
Right.
And this could determine how overt the PCs act in a city.
Yeah.
Whether they just come rolling through guns blazing, or whether they have to sneak in the middle of the night because they're not wanted. How likely will they get help from the establishment? I mean, hey man, you're rolling up on in Shadowrun, if you roll up on Seattle, middle of the night, your apartment gets broken into in Shadowrun, can you call the cops? Can you call Lone Star Security?
I mean, you can.
Or are you going to get are you going to get the shakedown for it?
Absolutely. Definitely just shoot the perpetrator.
Yeah. So there's a good example right there.
And then your neighbors aren't going to call the cops either, because you're living in that part of the city, so.
If you're Shadowrunner, probably.
Yeah.
Unless you're a wage slave.
Yeah.
Which could happen.
At which point in time, then you can safely call the guards anyway.
Call Renronku, because yeah. So how likely are they going to get help from the establishment, and also from the populace as well? If you're a bunch of adventurers and the city is really kind to adventurers, you could roll up, you might get discounts on merch.
Sure.
Or you might get run out of town.
Yep. To me, when approaching the concept of law and the people who enforce it in a game, fairness is something you really have to think about. If your players are attempting to be lawful, or, you know, appear lawful, there has to be some way for them to know the laws of the place that they're going, right? Especially in D&D or something like that.
They're usually posted someplace, or there's a town crier.
Yep. Because in Shadowrun or any modern game, right, you just look them up. You type it into a search engine. What are the laws in this city?
Yep.
And it's no problem. That is easy to deal with in a modern game. But in a D&D style game, or any Renaissance style game, any place where that technology isn't at hand, you should not punish your players for breaking laws that they have no concept exist, especially if you haven't in any way attempted to inform them.
Or remind them. Yeah, like give some gentle clues that the laws don't work well. A good example of that is, honestly, if you play any type of sci-fi campaign. So I'll use Starfinder as an example.
Okay.
So you go and meet an alien civilization. Their culture is completely different. You roll into that town, and because you step on an ant, maybe that's their sacred animal.
Sure.
And now you've broken a law, right? You didn't know that. Now, it could be one of those things where that can be the adventure and you have to get yourself out of jail. Or you give, as a GM, a gentle reminder, hey, by the way, the laws work differently here, so you might want to look those up. And then that requires some kind of role.
Right.
And then they can figure that out.
Sure.
Which I think is a culture role in Starfinder.
It is most important to attempt to deal with this in games that don't innately have a mechanic for it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Starfinder, like you said, you're about to land on a planet. You make your culture roll. Oh, crap. I don't know. Cool. Let me log into this, you know, site and find out what I need to know.
Yep. Now, these types of things are easy to toss together as some kind of handout as well.
Yeah.
And if you're prepping for your game and you know they're going to spend some time in the city, this is a great example of downtime activities as well. Give them a handout. Stick it online. Give them a PDF. If you're playing in person, whenever we're able to play in person again, give them a sheet.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a kingdom and all of the cities kind of share similar laws, or if things differ a little bit, as a storyteller, throw that out a little bit. Give them that stuff. Oh, by the way, you know from your knowledge history or knowledge local or whatever knowledge skill it happens to be in whatever game you're using that this civilization does X, Y, and Z.
Yep.
And so you know that you can't wear the color red or you can't pet a dog after noon or whatever the hell it is.
And for
me, can't shoot a person in cold blood for some reason.
Because that's called murder.
Right.
But for me, I love little flavor laws. Right. Maybe the Duke that runs this place is mad as can be. And anybody who wears a tricorn is to be murdered on sight, but bicorns are to be thrown money at, right? Like, whatever. It's his law because somewhere in his shattered little brain, that's what he decided on.
See, depending upon the story and depending upon the players, knowing my players, I often try to throw a stupid law, which is slightly irritating to the player characters. Just because, for example, it takes 3 days to buy a weapon because you need a background check in Shadowrun.
Sure, why not?
And they'd be like, really, dude? Or you could do it illegally if you wanted.
Yeah.
But you can't get access to these great weapons. Or maybe there's some crap bureaucracy you have to deal with when you go in. Oh, you're going to adventure register as an adventurer? Okay, let's fill this out.
Right. So you actually...
Under a zone of truth.
Yeah, absolutely. You actually made me think about something that could be problematic. What if you're already signed up as an adventurer,
mm-hmm.
right? You've got your team name. You've got your colors or your badge, whatever.
Someone else took it?
No. What if you can't wear the color red in your city? How do you handle that as a team of people attempting to follow an overall kingdom's laws, but unable to follow it locally? What is the decision your paladin has to make there?
Oh, man. Copyright law in a medieval town. That sounds awful. It's definitely a lawful evil society.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's important because your reputation is based off of your branding.
Sure.
But as a paladin, you're required to wear the uniform that you presented when you signed your paperwork, but you're also now not allowed to wear the uniform. Do you just not go in the town? What do you do? How do you handle it?
I mean, you could skirt the law or you have to adapt. Yeah, there's lots of different things. So all of these examples are just tidbits we're throwing at you guys. Hopefully some of this is making sense, but all of this adds to the game. What we're really trying to do is give you guys stuff to add lore into your game. And not only that, give the players a reminder that your actions have some kind of consequence. Remember, we talk about playing the game with consequences of actions, because while they're doing something, something else is going on entirely without their influence.
Yeah, the world moves on without them.
And this is a great way to make this a living, breathing game,
yes,
as opposed to something that you're reading out of a book. There's nothing wrong with reading modules. I play modules all the time. Matt's played modules. Our friends have run modules. But adding these little tidbits will make a module, blow it up into a living, breathing game.
That is actually, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to dive into Rime of the Frostmaiden yet.
I have not.
So one of the things they do is, in each of the 10 towns, there are things that are going on, and if you choose not to go there, or choose not to deal with the problems in each that each represents, then those have consequences. Those effects extend outward into the rest of the game.
Oh, that's cool.
Which, like you said, that's part of feeling like you're actually in a living, breathing world. When things that you didn't deal with continue along the course that they were on, they don't just evaporate.
Yeah, they're there to stay.
So, yeah, I think that's, to me, that is something that I really appreciate being written into a, it's a very big book, but it's still just a giant module.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back after these messages. If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com. See you there. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right. So when we last left off, we were talking about how all of this adds lore to your game. And we talked about, you were mentioning Rime of the Frostmaiden and how it's basically a gigantic module, but it's got consequences of actions built into it. And this is one of the ways to add that consequence of action.
Sure.
Now, one thing that you never really hear a lot about in a role-playing game, at least with, all right, I'm going to go personal, because at least with our players, because we play a bunch of thieves and murder hobos, but at least our friends do, is how the law can help you in a game.
Sure. The law can be helpful, and one of the ways it can be helpful is it can easily be one of your best sources of information.
So give me an example of that.
All right. You breeze into a town. You're actually nice to the guards.
Yep.
And you now can easily find out, where do we want to stay? Where don't we want to stay? Where do we want to drink? Where don't we want to drink? Is there any place in this town that is questionable that we should stay out of, in quotation marks?
The bad part of town, stuff like that.
Sure. Now, for some groups of characters, you clearly want to stay out of the bad part of town. For some groups of characters, you can phrase it that you want to stay out, but now you know exactly where you need to be.
Now I know where to fence my stolen goods.
Exactly. So the law can be very helpful in that manner. The law can be very helpful in that if there is something going on that you do not want to appear directly involved with, you can then turn that information over to them with the understanding that your name never comes up.
Or if you're playing a hero, maybe you're playing the lawful good paladin.
Sure.
Then you might work directly with the guards to help save the town from a bunch of roaming monsters. They could be a source of NPCs to give you missions.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it would be interesting to write an entire game where you are the law.
The Force Grey is a YouTube show about literally playing Four Water Deep, their specific adventuring party that is city sponsored.
Oh, wonderful.
So you could easily do something like that. I think, that would be a fun game to play, in that basically you slowly expand your sphere of influence out from your starting city to maybe helping other cities, and just keep growing from a small city power to a regional power to even a kingdom-wide power.
I think it would be interesting to start as a city guard in Eberron, maybe in the city of Sharn, start with like investigating murders or stopping crime, and then you branch out, and then all of a sudden you move up the chain in Breland, and then you start doing more of like some spy shit. That'd be kind of a cool adventure arc.
Yeah. There's there's, what is it? The Dark Lanterns? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, they're called Dark Lanterns.
Yeah.
And that would be another cool way to do it. And it, I'm just using that one as an example, but, and then the opposite of that, of course, which a lot of people are familiar with, is running a thieves guild.
Yeah.
Sowing dissent from within, or working with some kind of, there's a lot of ways to tailor these games using the law as something to latch your story onto.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a great bare bones.
And even as a criminal syndicate, the law can be helpful to you as long as they're in your pocket.
Yes. Well, and that's another example for role-playing opportunities or ways that you can use them as antagonists.
Oh, yeah.
You got some dirty cops, protagonists.
Yeah. I feel like they are underutilized other than as bouncers in a lot of games, right? They're just like, don't let us catch you doing anything funny. And that's all they do.
And I think the reason because of that is a lot of storytellers don't have the time or don't take the time to flesh out these little tidbits in their game. And guess what? We do this too, right? We're not perfect. But we try to let people know about this stuff so that you can make your games better, more robust, more rich. Not only for yourself. I mean, yeah, if you want to write a story and you want to publish a story, this is obviously stuff you need to have. But if you want to tell a good story for your characters and you want them to react better, and to be perfectly honest, if you're rolling up on a city and you've spent some time to make it, then knowing the laws in that city is very important because your player characters aren't going to remember much.
I got into a Twitter conversation with somebody earlier this week, and it went something like this. If this is a city that your players are passing through, hit them with 5 senses, a place to stay, a place to drink, and 3 NPCs.
Yep.
One of which should be a town guard. That's it. If it's going to be a city that they're based out of,
then you need to add more to it.
And at that point in time, the local law system should be part of what you add.
Right. You don't have to do this for every single town.
Absolutely not.
And in fact, you shouldn't, because the characters
will be a waste of your time.
They will easily get bogged down by stuff. But when we played my game Reld, Harden's Forge was one of the cities that you guys knew the local laws because your characters came from that town.
Right.
Now, as you guys ventured off into the realms, well, some of those were fly-by-night cities that I literally had a couple of sentences.
Sure.
And that was it. And that was fine. So basically what we're trying to say is flesh it out when it needs it, when it adds to your story, and when it doesn't, don't worry about it.
Yeah. You need one guard. They're going to ask what his name is. Her name, their name, they're going to ask.
Go ahead and go find a name generator. Go ahead and have that ready. I'm terrible with names. So I literally just have one online that I just click a button and press play.
Yep. I'm far more notebook centric. And so I literally have pages of names that I just cross through as I use them.
Now, if you're sitting at your house listening to this and you're like, man, I don't have the time to come up with all of this, worry not, my friends. We have already come up with a template for you. And so we're going to go through it real quick. It's basically just a series of questions. So how do you base your law or your city law off of? Easy. What do we start with?
Well, what's your city name?
Yeah. You got to know your city name. If you don't know what your city name is, you're screwed. There you go.
Yep.
Come up with the name. Go find a generator and get that. What is the economic base? I.e., what is their main import and export? And Matt, you were hesitant about this.
I was at first. And then I immediately came up with a reason why it actually makes sense. And then I was like, oh, right. Because in the Wild West times, in New York, if you steal a horse, you go to jail. Maybe not even for very long. But in the OK Corral, if you steal a horse, you get hung.
Oh, yeah. They're stringing you up.
Same with cattle rustling.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as you said it, and my first thought was, really? And then I was like, yes, really. That makes perfect sense to me once I see it.
So know what kind of economy the city has. If it's a bunch of people making bows, that's different than, you know, a mining city. And there's going to be different laws regarding that according to the type of money they make or the things they need. In addition to that, how is the economy? Is it on the uptick? Is it slow? Is it non-existent? Is there a lot of poverty? Because that will determine a whole mess of other questions we have below this, like the level of crime, for example, or whether people are desperate enough to commit crimes.
Sure.
Or whether the local law, whoever that happens to be, maybe locks down on the populace. And so you might have a tyrannical government. Speaking of which,
what is the government?
Yeah, there's all kinds.
Because if you have a monarchy, then there are going to be laws present that you don't have if it's a republic or if it's a theocracy or
plurocracy or majocracy or anything that starts with ocracy.
Sure.
And if you don't know what types of governments there are, go look it up real quick. There's a billion of them.
It's true. And there's extra when you add D&D to it.
Because
while there are no majocracies.
Page 18 of the DMG in 5th edition.
Also, what are the major influences on the government and of the government?
So this could be events, i.e. a recent war, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or maybe local crops died, and so the town is experiencing food shortages.
Famine, plague.
But more importantly, stuff like character-driven influences, such as maybe one of the leaders was mysteriously
assassinated.
Found dead. Or maybe someone has come to power who the local populace hates.
But these influences can also be very positive things. What if there was just an overthrow of a tyrant, and now you've got a benevolent despot that is just trying to turn everything around? What if that lonely tour outside of town turns out is filled with gold, and now all of a sudden you're a boomtown of gold miners? Like, all of these things are huge positive turns, but that also completely change the terrain as far as politics goes.
Consequence of actions.
Yep.
That being said, what kind of corruption is in this city? So we got a high level corruption, low level corruption, some kind of mid range, and we're talking about more like the corruption in the power plays.
Sure.
And then of course, on the opposite side, what's the kind of corruption or crime in the streets?
Right. The realist, most often, I think you'll find that any place that has a very high crime rate probably has a relatively high corruption rate.
Yeah. Or there are things that are needed by the populace that they can't get.
Right.
So you might find people smuggling. Here's a good example. If there's a despot who is ruling the city with an iron grip, and he's got a lockdown on the food, and he's given the majority of it to the nobles, and the peasants are starving, then you're going to see a lucrative trade from the Thieves Guild in smuggling food.
Right. And at which point in time...
Or weapons to revolt against the local despot.
Both.
Yes.
Give them enough food to give them energy, and then weapons to handle the business.
Another question. Who runs the show?
Yeah. We touched that a little bit. Not just who actually is ostensibly in charge, but who is actually in charge.
Yep. And it's good to know who it is in face and who it is in reality. What is the local religion or lack thereof?
Yep. And D&D style games, right? There's a pantheon. The larger the city, the more likely a city is going to have multiple temples. Whereas a smaller city, probably going to only have one major temple and possibly some shrines, and a tiny city might only have a shrine.
Sure. Is it a dominating religion too?
Yeah.
Because again, that'll determine more. If it's a theocracy, guess what? It's probably going to be a dominating religion, but some might hold sway over others.
Yeah.
Is it a mix of those? Probably a mix, but flavor your city as appropriate. And then of course, I mix this in with religion, but also what do people consider taboo or illegal? And that's usually what I mean by that, like behaviors mostly, or it could be like sacred animals and stuff like that too, if you wanted, or specific things that people do. Maybe they have to observe specific days. There's lots of different things you could throw in. And again, use them at your discretion. I wouldn't lock the player characters down, but use this stuff to throw in tension or storytelling interest.
Yeah. And I mean, it can be an obstacle that intentionally is something that your players have to work around.
Yeah, you got to be a little bit of an asshole. I mean, that's how it goes.
It's good for him.
Yes.
Builds character.
What are their views on magic or cybernetics or mutants or superheroes or whatever that power base is that your game is playing with?
Yeah. Just adventurers in general, right? Because a 10th level fighter technically isn't magical, but he is certainly not the same.
He's a badass.
Right.
So, yeah. How do they feel about that? How do they feel about local adventuring guilds? Or how do they feel about powerful individuals just rolling up on their town? Because depending upon how you play your city, that could be a source of tension from the rulers or the people in power.
Yeah.
I mean, what's a town guard going to say to a 20th level wizard? He's going to turn him into a toad.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And that is another interesting thing you can interject into your PC's life. Because when they get to that level of sophistication, how do they react when they're pretty much godlike?
Right. And do they revel in it, or are they hiding from that fame / notoriety?
Or is there someone who's even more badass than your player character? In which case, now you're on their radar because you're rolling in and bossing people around.
Yep.
It's always a bigger fish. We touched a bit on this.
It's true. But how do your citizenry feel, or the law feel, about things like alcohol or drugs? What are the contrabands of this town? And is it normal? Is it extreme? Or are there less of it?
And this is something, and this doesn't just include drugs or alcohol, but like stuff like poisons.
Sure.
Stuff like, if you're playing one, you Shadowrun again, like certain types of cybernetics, toxic waste, monsters. I mean, you know, if you roll up and bring a drow into Waterdeep.
Yeah.
Unless that guy's got two scimitars and wispy hair that whips in the wind with a panther that he can summon.
We
get the point. Yeah. So figure it out. What happens if somebody commits a crime? So what are the repercussions for those players' actions? And Matt brought up a good point about the horses, right? Do you get hung or do you just go to jail?
Yeah, they
get your hand chopped off. What happens if you steal? What happens if you murder somebody? What happens if any of that stuff? You don't have to have specific answers for everything, but have a general idea from a game master perspective of what's going to happen if your PCs go off the rails and just start rampaging.
And if they are entering a territory where the law is extremely draconic, probably be best if they have some idea of that.
Yeah, let them know. Because otherwise they're in for a world of hurt.
And it's, you know, it's going back to attempting to be fair to your players. Now, if they continue to push the same buttons they've always pushed after a fair warning, lop the thief's hand off. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. What happens if they happen to be guilty or innocent? Who determines that also?
Yeah. Because throughout history, there has been a wide range of judge and jury versus mob rule versus...
It could be a mob stoning you, could be the local cleric telling you that that person's a witch.
Yeah.
It could be anybody.
Could just be a cop who's, I am the law, right? Got your judge dread
action
going.
Paladin of Vengeance rolling through and exacting everything. Figure that out. Is there any assistance with the law? So lawyers, barristers, some kind of counsel, a favorable cleric to read you your last rites.
Sure.
And again, yeah, is it mob rule? We talking Wild West where everybody kind of solves their own problems? Is it some kind of corporate consensus where they make like a corporate vote if you're playing something like that?
Right.
And then what's the town guard like, the actual guard?
And I think on some level, you know, people are people. You're going to have ones that are cool and ones that are assholes. But what's the general principle of the guard?
So how big is it?
Sure.
So you got, is it a podunk town with only a couple guards? Is it a megacorp in itself?
that has...
Talking about you, Lone Star.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but each of the megacorps have their own...
Private security, sure.
Private security.
Yeah.
And they are KOS if they choose to be.
Yes.
So,
because they're sovereign nations.
Yep.
We're talking Shadowrun, by the way, guys.
Well, Cyberpunk in general.
Oh, Cyberpunk too, yeah. What location is the town guard? What's their power base?
Is,
do they have a keep? Do they have a giant building? Is it floating in the air?
They have a
is
tiny
it,
jail?
But yeah, a tiny jail. Is it a big wizard that's zooming around in a Zeppelin? It doesn't matter, right? Figure that out. Who funds them? Where do they get their money from? Because someone's got to pay these guys.
Right. Is it taxes? Is it a noble that funds them? Do they just extort money off of everybody? And
shake people down?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then are there any specialties in the guards or the law as well? So, and we mentioned a couple of these, and here's just a few. Investigators, homicide detectives, vice, of course.
Mage hunters,
cybersecurity.
Yeah.
And
Corporate mages,
absolutely.
Keeping that industrial espionage down so that some other mage doesn't come up astrally and...
Bounty hunters?
Sure.
Which there's even, or at least in third edition, there was a bounty hunter prestige class in D&D, which kind of sucked, but it was
but
there.
They tried,
yeah. And then there's a lot more, I'm sure. So
sure.
Build that out, make it interesting. Again, more flavor and opportunities for the PCs to get involved.
And lastly, and possibly most importantly, How does the general populace feel about the law?
Yeah, does it suck? Do they like it?
Because if the law is overly tyrannical and draconic, then the people will help you from the law because they hate the law more than they hate you.
Unless they're in fear, in which case they will turn you in.
Right.
So it will allow you as the storyteller to come up with interesting interactions based off of just the concept of your city.
And, you know, I've actually pitched a game to you recently based around strictly the law and the government of a city, which is, what if you ran a rebellion campaign?
Which I've already got a character ready for it.
Yep. So, you know, you can have an entire game based strictly around the law and its effects on the general populace. So just something to think about.
We'll have these up online as well. So if you were taking notes and you kind of missed, cause we're weaving all over the place, we'll have this template up there for you guys to download and look at. And again, if you have any questions, if we missed something that you felt that is important, write to us info@goblinscorner.com, or again, I'm Eric@goblinscorner.com. And of course, Matt is
Matt@goblinscorner.com.
All right, that's it. We are done for this evening. Hope you enjoyed everything. Once again, my name's Eric.
And I'm Matt.
We'll see you next time.
Good night.
The Goblin's Corner is written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Staples.
The music is by the Mighty D20.
This has been a Subterranean production.